This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. All summer, seven candidates for New Hampshire governor have been hard at work with debates, interviews, and trying to meet as many voters as they can at community cookouts, parades, and old home days. Now, with the primary on September 13th, they're making their final pitches on why they should be their party's nominee. Here at NHPR, we've been following these primary campaigns. You can check out our extensive coverage online at nhpr.org. Also, next week on Morning Edition, we'll hear from each of the four Republican contenders. And today on The Exchange, we have the three Democratic gubernatorial candidates with us in studio. Let's hear from you. What do you want the next New Hampshire governor to focus on? What do you want to know about where these Democratic candidates stand? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And our guests are Mark Connolly, principal at Newcastle Investment Advisors, former director of the State Bureau of Securities Regulation. And Mark Connolly, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Our other candidate is Steve Marchand, former mayor of Portsmouth. He's today principal of SRM Consulting, a public affairs and communications firm. And Steve Marchand, good to see you, too.
Good to see you, too.
And also with us, Colin Van Ostern, executive counselor from District 2. And Councilor Van Ostern, thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Well, and all of you, although this is more of a conversation than a formal debate, I would ask that nobody filibuster today so our listeners can get a full chance to hear how all three of you feel about the important issues. And I want to remind everybody that you can join us again at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. I want to start out, guys, with a political question. Given the overwhelming victory by Bernie Sanders in the New Hampshire Democratic primary back in February and the progressive positions, left of center positions he supported, what does that say to you about how Democrats want you to act if elected? And Mark Connolly, I'll start with you.
I think that this year is certainly a year of uncertainty, and we've seen that played out in the presidential election you mentioned. And I think what it really represents is people are tired of the same old, that they feel that their wage growth is not going up. They don't feel the economy is really in their best interests. They see the banks bailed out. They see financial institutions doing much better than they are. The middle class has been hollowed out. And, you know, if you go back to the 1920s, you'd find that's the period where we had such a diversion between the wealthy and less wealthy. And I think people are frustrated, and they're showing up, and they're expressing that through the political process. I feel that this year is a year of change in the sense of what we need to do in terms of moving our country forward, including the state. I see myself somewhere as an outsider in this race. I'm not a career politician. I've been involved in state government. I've been involved in the legislature in the 70s, Deputy Secretary of State, Director of
Security. As a Republican in the 70s.
That's correct. And I think that having the kind of business orientation I have with government experience and not being the insider choice is basically, I think, an advantage to my campaign. We'll find out on the 13th.
Does Senator Sanders' strong victory here in New Hampshire say that New Hampshire Democrats, because that's who we're talking to really this hour, want a more left-leaning party? And if so, what would you, are you the man for them?
Well, let me say this. I think that when people vote for governor, they're looking for a set of attributes, common sense, get things done. Like we've elected the last 18 or last 20 years kind of Democrats. I wouldn't necessarily draw the conclusion that what's going on at the presidential level is going to play out at the state level. Certainly, we have to do things like full-time kindergarten, pre-K programs, passenger rail, full-time expansion of Medicaid. All those kind of things are showing up and more progressive, if you will. And our state is moving more deep purple than in the past. And I think that what I've said in the campaign, in order to meet the challenge of the 21st century, we have to step it up as an economy. So I would think progressive values are going to be very important to us being able to do that as a state.
What do you think, Steve Marchand? Do you see New Hampshire Democrats moving more left?
I see New Hampshire Democrats and the state of New Hampshire moving more left. I'm the only one of us three that voted for Bernie in the New Hampshire primary. I'm the only one that wants to legalize marijuana. I'm the only one 100% against Northern Pass. I'm the only one that wants to repeal the corporate tax cut that these two guys now support. I'm the only one with a specific plan for paid family leave. The state is bluer than many politicians, including some of our Democratic politicians, believe. And I do think that the February results are one indication of that. It's why I'm the most progressive candidate in the race. You can do that, and this is part of the New Hampshire way. You can have the best record of fiscal responsibility that I do in an executive position, praised by the union leader when I got elected mayor, and 2 weeks ago in their editorial board, and have the most progressive values at the same time. One of my missions as a candidate is to prove that you can be fiscally responsible and have very progressive social values. Those are not inconsistent. In fact, I think that's the future of New Hampshire.
New Hampshire has had Democratic governors, Steve Marchand, for the better part of two decades, as I'm sure you know, starting with Jean Shaheen and then moving on to Lynch and Hassan, all seen as sort of moderates. So how would you be different from those pretty successful Democratic predecessors, successful in that they had no problem getting reelected?
Sure. Well, look, there's two parts to this. One thing is you're trying to do more than simply get the title. I'm running because I want the job, and there are specific things that we need to do. And the more specific you can be up front about what the challenge is that we're getting old as a state and we don't have a whole lot of people that employers feel like will be able to be hired in the next 20 years. So it makes them nervous about making private sector investments. It turns out the things that drive young families that we need to come to New Hampshire are progressive values. And a lot of the things I just described that make me stand out, not just compared to Republicans, but compared to the guys to my left and right here today. That's what the people of New Hampshire are looking for. But as long as you have a record of fiscal responsibility, you can articulate this, the thing that I'm going to tell you that most folks that are listening today know. We need more revenue. And I have specific ways to raise that revenue, reversing the corporate tax cut and so forth.
All right. Lots to dig into then. I'm going to ask you guys that demographic question in just a minute. But you're saying in terms of politics then, Steve, listeners can't see, but I put you in the middle. You're in our central microphone here today in the studio. You should be on the left hand, Mike, you're saying.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The future of New Hampshire, you can be fiscally responsible, the best on that of anybody. And you can be to the left of these two guys on social issues and win and be a really good governor.
Well, and Colin Van Ostern, when I hear people talk about this Democratic primary, they tend to put you in this sort of moderate establishment role in this primary race. How do you feel about that, especially given the progressive turn that we saw in the New Hampshire Democratic primary?
I'm running to be governor of all the people of New Hampshire, not governor of one party or one part of one party. That said, I am proud to have the most grassroots progressive support of any candidate in this race. Most of both Bernie Sanders' steering committee in the state and Hillary Clinton's steering committee have endorsed me. And grassroots-driven groups like Democracy for America, which fueled Bernie's surge, the bold progressives at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee have as well. And I think the reason is because they know what matters is results in progress. I cast the deciding vote to extend Medicaid health care coverage to 50,000 people in our state. It is perhaps the most significant progressive accomplishment in New Hampshire in the past decade.
Supported by Republicans as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the ways that we make progress is sometimes you have to compromise to get it done. One of the challenging compromises there was it will expire on our next governor's watch. And so I am running on making it permanent. I believe that as the only candidate who's been part of that progress that we've made there, who's led the effort to restore Planned Parenthood funding in our state, who has been endorsed by Planned Parenthood's Action Fund here in New Hampshire, who's been fighting for clean and renewable energy projects that you hear from both Hillary and Bernie on. You know, there are projects now in Durham, Portsmouth, Plymouth, Berlin, the airport in Manchester, the biggest solar array in the state in Peterborough that I fought for that are happening because they're creating local jobs, they're bringing down energy costs, and they're protecting the environment. I believe that's both the right progressive vision for our state. It's the most consistent progressive record, and it's the way we're going to keep our state moving forward for all the people of New Hampshire.
I mentioned the three previous Democratic governors, Shaheen, Lynch, Hassan, all again viewed as more moderate Democrats. How would you be different from them?
Well, I've sat at an executive council table with Maggie Hassan for the last 4 years, so it's a matter of public record when we have disagreed, and occasionally we do disagree. I think she's been a great governor.
Remind us of those disagreements.
What's that?
Remind us of those disagreements.
So there have been, you know, votes, big and small. Some of them, frankly, what the executive council does is really a management committee. It's kind of like a board of directors for the governor. So some of the areas I've differed from things that she or an agency have brought forward have had to do with making sure that a bidding process is fair. When a contract comes forward where I think it wasn't properly bid out or the only person to bid on the services used to work on that bidding process themselves. They quit and then they applied as a consultant for the job to get a big raise. I don't think that's fair. And so I have voted against that when I, you know, being independent-minded is part of the job. There are also public policy issues. I was the first candidate for governor to come out and say in the wake of the Paris bombings that our diversity is part of our strength and the best way we can keep our state safe and secure is by ensuring that when we review who can and can't come to our country, that we don't use a single litmus test of nationality or religion.
So you disagreed with the governor's statement that she wanted to pause on allowing Syrian refugees to come to New Hampshire.
I remember a week ago now, I saw a picture of a little boy, 4 or 5 years old, about the age of my son in Syria. He is not a national security threat to our country.
We all saw that picture, yeah, covered with ashes.
If you acknowledge that he cannot, a 4-year-old orphan cannot be a security threat, then you have to acknowledge that nationality shouldn't be the litmus test, and you have to look at other factors.
The exchange number for you to join us today is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, it's a conversation with the 3 Democratic candidates for governor. All next week on Morning Edition, we'll be featuring the 4 Republican candidates. So, of course, join us for those interviews. Find them online next week at nhpr.org. And let's hear from you now with your questions for these Democratic contenders. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And the candidates are Mark Connelly, Steve Marchand, and Colin Van Ostern. And all of you mentioned in your first responses this demographic / economic challenge that New Hampshire faces. I've got a tweet from Scott who says, New Hampshire is aging. How can we keep young people from leaving and attract new people to our state? And I'll kick this part off with you, Steve Marchand. Go ahead.
Sure. It's in some ways the premise of why I'm running. I wasn't planning to run for governor this year, but I found it not sufficiently addressed by either of my 2 opponents today and certainly not the Republicans.
Wait, you weren't planning on running?
When I woke up in early March, I had 0 intention of running for governor this year, as God is my witness. This is something in the last 5 months, and yet I've been able to catch up to these guys, which tells you something about the ability when you have a strong message with specificity to get it done.
So to Scott's question.
Yes. On this one, I used to be the director of corporate relations for the University of New Hampshire. I got to talk in a non-political context to well over 100 businesses. They would say, regardless of their personal political beliefs, the biggest challenge they faced is that if they made an investment in the private in their business, that they were not confident that there would be people around to hire if the investment paid off. So this is a 5-word mantra I've been using for 20 years as an auditor, a mayor, and director of corporate. Public investment breeds private investment.
Those Such 5 as words. Public investment.
Yeah, it came down to 4 things. Number 1, you got to deliver America's best educational outcomes in pre-K through 12. That is the number 1 determinant for an out-of-state young family figuring out whether or not to take a job, say, in Rochester. Number 2, reversal of the opiate and heroin crisis. Number 3, reversing the deficit in infrastructure, but typically in the least sexy parts of it, bridges, roads, water, wastewater, sewer. And the final is building a culture of entrepreneurism, which means cutting the business enterprise tax, making the research and development tax credit refundable, and changing our non-compete laws to make it easier for somebody to start a business. Those are the 4 things, and they involve public investment that signals to the private sector that they should make long-term investments.
Well, a little bit later, we'll find out where the money might come from a Marchand administration to pay for that.
And I'm the specific one on that one,
okay.
Too.
Okay. Mark Connelly, how about you? What specifically would you do to address this demographic issue that Scott raises?
Okay, let me put it in context. When I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s here, we had big inward migration. Now we're lagging the United States and New England as a whole. Our only population and economic growth is going to be 65 or older projected. We're going to lose population from 19 to 64 years of age in the next 10 to 20 years. So when you look at that kind of outlook and we're having slow wage growth, we have to step it up to meet the challenge of the 21st century. I put out specific proposals about education, K through 12, how we need to fund it, a new education funding formula. We have to put more money into the university system. We have to have innovation. Things like, for example, if kids have the highest debt load getting out of UNH and the second highest tuition rate in the country, if they're willing to stay here for, let's say, 5 years, maybe we should think about how we can cut their debt a little bit. We have Berlin, which the Coos County would be the oldest, the oldest state in the country. How about thinking about a long-term plan for the university system to be in that area and maybe cut tuition for kids that want to go north? So we have to really convince younger people that we are in the 21st century. We look at Nashua to Manchester. That area is the largest area in the country without meaningful passenger rail. Boston is a international economy. We're literally at the end of the line. We have to link ourselves passenger rail. All these things add up
to how we should get ourselves into this economy. Transportation policy. I just mentioned passenger rail. We have some of the worst rural roads and bridges in America. We have to do something about that. We have – renewable energy is the technology of the future. Our stated goal public policy-wise is 25% by 2025. I've said we have to be 50% by 2035. The opiate crisis, we have one of the second highest addiction rates in the country, second lowest treatment rates. We have to put serious money into this area, including mental health. There are a lot of areas that we need to step it up as a state. And if we do that, I think we start to dial back the kind of demographic profile that actually is now hurting our state in terms of looking forward.
Okay, so lots of interesting specifics from both of you, and we'll follow up after a break. But I do want to get you in, Colin Van Oostern, too. This is a big deal that Scott raises.
It is. I've seen it as a dad, as a business leader at great employers like Stonyfield Yogurt and Southern New Hampshire University, where I've struggled with some of those hiring conversations when you're bringing somebody here. I've seen it on the executive council. Frankly, no one ever dreams of being an executive counselor when they grow up one day. But in
Most
June,
you don't know what an executive counselor is. So.
Right, exactly. In June of 2011, in the course of 2 weeks, the council shut off funding for Planned Parenthood, and it shut off what's called the Capital Corridor Rail Study Grant. That is the central foundation for how to bring passenger rail to our state. It was those two decisions that prompted me to run. I ran on those two issues. We won. I got Planned Parenthood funding restored, got the Capital Corridor Rail Study done. The reason I mention it is rail is one piece of an important puzzle for how we can strengthen our state and bring and keep more young people and young families and new businesses and startups here. A friend of mine runs a digital software company in Manchester, and a year ago they got outside investment to help them grow. They have a long list of customers. And it came with a contingency. Find four software engineers within 90 days or move your company to Boston. And they hired the fourth on day 86 after trying very hard, and they are still here. But the fact that that ever was a contingency was a huge alarm bell that went off for him and for me. He tells me if we had rail, they could have had folks hired in a couple weeks, and most of them would end up staying and making their lives here because we have better quality of life. I saw it at Stonyfield, too, when you hire a new executive and they come in. When they make the decision about whether or not to move here and which town to live in, the first thing they ask about is the quality of the schools. Is there full-day public kindergarten, which I believe we have to have in every community in the state? Are there great schools? Those are the decisions that will drive the number of young people and young families, and new businesses and startups that keep our state moving forward. And we have to make the right investments over the next couple of years in terms of our economy for a decade or more.
I have to ask all of you real quick about rail. Councilor Van Oostern, you first. I mean, you really seem to be saying rail is key to our demographic revitalization. Are you banking too much on a train?
Well,
I mean, at some point, it's just a train.
So commuter rail is one of a piece of many ways that we can strengthen our workforce here in New Hampshire. But we have commissioned an independent study which has been very clear. Rail will help businesses create 5,600 new jobs. That is significant in our state's economy. Will help develop over 1.9 million square feet of commercial real estate. Even if you never set foot on a train, it will mean less traffic on I-93 and the Fort Everett Turnpike. That is a good deal for New Hampshire, and we have to invest in terms of growing our state. It is also about full-day kindergarten, better workforce laws like moving towards paid family leave and sick leave, a higher minimum wage, investing in job training in key sectors that we know are going to grow, like advanced manufacturing and IT and hospitality and healthcare. There's no one of these is a silver bullet. But we have an opportunity and a need in the next couple of years to make the smart, fiscally responsible investments to keep our state and our economy moving forward, and we have to do it now.
Okay, and I'll ask you guys about rail, too, in just a moment. And coming up, we'll start taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. I'll also ask our guests a series of lightning round questions on a number of issues, so stay with us for that. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a conversation with the three Democratic candidates for New Hampshire governor. And all next week on Morning Edition, we'll feature the four Republican candidates. Join us for those interviews next week. Check them out online at nhpr.org. And right now, let's get your questions and comments in for these three Democratic contenders. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Mark Connolly, principal at Newcastle Investment Advisors, former director of the State Bureau of Securities Regulation, Steve Marchand, former mayor of Portsmouth. He's the principal of SRM Consulting, a public affairs and communications firm, and also Colin Van Ostern, executive counselor from District 2. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Steve Marchand and Mark Connolly, I wanted to give you a chance, too, to jump in on my question. I'll start with you, Mark Connolly. You know, rail, supported or not, are we putting too much hope on how much benefit we would get from a rail system, which, by the way, would be very expensive, which, by the way, some people say isn't worth it given the rural and suburban nature of our state?
I think it's critically important. I'll tell you why. First of all, energy. We spend 43% of our energy expenditures on the way we drive cars. And we don't have any meaningful public transportation in our state beyond bus service and cars. When you look at Manchester Airport, at the high water mark, it was over 4 million people traveling in and out of there. Now it's around 2 million. So linking ourselves as closely as possible to Boston makes sense. It's been shown it's going to create 7,500 new jobs. There'll be 2 million square feet of new commercial development. And this is what I say. It's not going to be expensive, relatively speaking. It's going to be somewhere between 5 and 7 million in terms of operating costs and capital costs. We're now at a generational low in terms of funding for interest rates. This is the time to do it. And I'll tell you this, when you look at the businesses that will be advantaged by this, it's huge.
Where does the money come to build it, though? It's at like $230
million. Half the money will come from the federal government, and then we can bond the rest. And this is the way I think we should do it. The state certainly can put money in. The cities and towns can put money in. And importantly, businesses should put money into this because they are going to be they're going to be the beneficiary of this. So there's something I proposed. It's called tax increment financing, which means that the business profits tax, the rooms and meals tax, the parking revenues. I believe that these revenues will come in the increased property taxes that come up with us. We can use this to pay down the operating and capital costs. And I believe the net benefit of the passenger rail will be advantage to our state. You could make the same argument about Manchester Airport. Should we not have an airport? Bringing other means of transportation in our state is key to our future. We have to link ourselves more to the southern part of New England and the United States.
Okay, Steve Marchand, are we putting too much hope on the benefits rail would bring?
Well, look, clearly there are tremendous benefits that can be accrued if done properly. The airport, what it could do for freight, what it could do for the passenger side. One difference I have between myself and the other two here is they've been talking about it, whether they mean to or not, as sort of a silver bullet for much of the campaign. And what you can tell, we haven't had an ex-mayor as a governor since Hugh Gregg. And part of the reason for that is because when you're on the receiving end of the downshifting of costs and what it means for the inability of smaller cities and towns to be able to unilaterally fund infrastructure improvements like sewer and water, wastewater, to some extent roads and bridges, that is very painful, and it makes difficult economic development at the local level. So you need somebody on the downside. So of that schlopping down of the cost. So rail has to be put in the broader context of this broad array of infrastructure that those 125 or so businesses I spoke with told me were necessary for future economic growth. They're not mutually exclusive, but this also gets to a question that your listeners should think about for the rest of this hour. We're all talking about a lot of stuff we'd like to do, but only one of us is going to get very specific about meaningful new revenue to pay for them. A proposal without money is just an idea.
I'm very curious about that. So go ahead. How would you pay for all the infrastructure and other improvements that you talked about?
Sure, from higher ed to preschool and so forth.
I
mean, you got to be specific. That's what leadership is. So $13 million for full-day kindergarten, an additional $5 million or so targeted each for English as second language. And for special education, because the feds aren't doing their job, an $8 million opiate plan that's specific and hyper-localized money that I've been working on since last year with my Chamber of Commerce, infrastructure improvements to knock down the red list of bridges, a business enterprise tax cut, refundable R&D tax credit for new businesses. All this stuff I had to pay for, so I got three ways. Number one, we need to increase the gas tax. We're driving more miles. We're more fuel efficient. Two good things, but bad put together. So
by
we need additional
much?
Revenue. Well, obviously, it's a legislative process. It would be several cents, and that the exact amount depends on the results of a legislative process.
And good luck getting that through the legislature.
Well, first of all, when you're running, you're doing it to earn capital, okay? And you're earning that capital so you could spend it. So you got to be specific, and we have done it in the recent past. That's number one. Number two, the business profits tax. We're on the way down from 8.5 to 7.9. My two opponents opposed it last year. Colin wrote an op-ed last year calling it a big corporate tax giveaway. 2015, Colin was correct. 2016, Colin and Mark say we can't afford to do it because it'll hurt business. They say it's a yo-yo, but it's a yo-yo right now because they only get the tax cut if we hit revenue targets they have no direct control over. So I would bring it back to the 8.5. That would generate $30 million a year. The 125 businesses I spoke with did not ask for that tax cut. It is a giveaway. And the third is the legalization, regulation, and taxation of marijuana. The rest of our neighbors will all legalize it within 3 years. Vermont almost did it last year. Maine and Mass have it on the ballot. Canada's prioritizing it. We know what works. It'll lower costs for judicial, incarceration, and law enforcement. It'll help with the heroin crisis by getting people off of opiates, which is responsible for 80% of the train. And it'll generate at least $30 million a year. The Concord Monitor said Steve's the only guy talking seriously about revenue. They said, my only problem, I might be off by half on the amount of revenue it would raise.
Well, and I'm going to set aside marijuana legalization for a moment because that's a big issue. And sure, not everybody agrees with that this is the answer to the opiate crisis.
Oh, around this table.
Crisis.
Right. And around this table, I'm the only one that thinks we should do it. But 65% of New Hampshireites think we should do it.
But so you're running on a platform of raising taxes.
Those three things, we need more revenue.
How
Let's
about
be honest.
You, Colin Van Ostern?
Well, I've made a point of being very specific about how we can pay for the initiatives I've been proposing. Also, to be clear, the biggest proposal that anyone has put on the table for making sure we have revenue in our state is making Medicaid expansion permanent. Since that happened, and I was proud to cast the deciding vote to implement it, $608 million of new revenue has come into our state to extend health care coverage to 49,660 people. As a result, 27% fewer people are showing up uninsured in our ERs. Our hospitals spent hundreds of millions of dollars less on uncompensated care. So making that permanent is absolutely central, and it will bring a significant amount of new revenue into our state.
For Medicaid,
not for
infrastructure and schools and so forth.
And that is making sure we have a healthy workforce, as we were talking about earlier in the conversation, and making sure we have the resources to tackle the opioid crisis, which we have not talked about enough in the show, given how much of a crisis it is facing our state, is one of the most important things that we can do to bring revenue into our state. Now, I also have been very specific, in fact, on passenger rail. Last fall, Councilor Chris Pappas and I and Congresswoman Annie Custer put together a financing plan, which is on the Executive Council website. And that goes into very specific detail about the federal grants that can come back into our state to help pay for it. It will ultimately cost $3 to $4 million from the general fund in order to bring rail here. But we spent $3 to $4 million.
That's it. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I would encourage you to take a look at it. The total cost of passenger rail includes both capital and operating costs. And as Mark correctly said a couple minutes ago, much of the money can come from the federal government. But you also have to get into specific detail to look at who's paying for the stations that are going to be developed, the rolling stock, essentially the train cars, the layover yards. And getting into that level of detail matters.
I have to ask you, Councilor Van Ostern, so what about a higher gas tax? What about a higher cigarette tax? What about a higher business profits tax? And don't worry, Mark Connelly, I'll ask you about this too. Yeah.
I come to the conversation believing we should try to keep taxes as low as possible wherever we can, and that is part of our competitive advantage in New Hampshire. Now, there are some areas where we have to make investments that will cost money, like having full-day kindergarten in every community in the state. I have proposed that a fair trade-off for that, which will cost us about $13 million a year, is a dime a pack on cigarettes. We would still have a lower cigarette tax in every state in New England. Doing that would ensure both that kids can start on an even playing field in every community across our state, but also that every parent who wants to work can work. And I think that is a worthwhile trade-off. And so that's why I've been specific when I've made policy proposals about how to strengthen people's lives and keep our state moving forward, where I think the money can come from to pay for it.
I got to let Mark Connelly jump in here. Higher taxes?
Thank you. First of all, our economy is growing, and we're some $150 million less in inflation-adjusted revenues than we were in 2008. Our budgets had a $100 million increase than we had budgeted. I think we're going to see increased revenues coming to the state. In terms of increasing our revenue sources, I put out a proposal, for example, to increase the tobacco tax by a dime, and that should go to the opioid crisis. I believe that's $15 million. I have said that the business profits tax can be more fully modernized in terms of how we look at certain aspects of it, like compensation, reasonable compensation. And I believe there's $20 to $30 million there we can put into full-time kindergarten and pre-K programs. I've talked about, if need be, we can increase the gasoline tax to improve our roads and bridges. And getting back to the original question, railroads, I think it's 5 to 7 million the operating capital costs. And I believe that if the increased revenues that come off tax revenues from all the areas that I've mentioned, business profits tax, rooms and meals tax, parking revenues, it's there to pay for this. I don't think it's a huge subsidy. And as far as marijuana goes, I'm not opposed to legalizing marijuana. I've said that we shouldn't lead with being the revenue being the driving force. We should look at putting a regulatory structure in first, understand what other states their experience has been, and then do it in a unique New Hampshire way. So certainly, you know, how we do these things has to be what is best for our state. And obviously, working with the legislature and getting it done is key to leadership. I've been a legislator. I know what it takes to do that. So a lot of these things we're talking about, we can talk about today. This is the tax I want to increase. That's the tax I want to increase. That's the one I don't want to do. It takes the ability to go in and set a vision, put a budget together, and know how to do that. And I've done that. I've worked for two different transition teams putting budgets together. And I'll tell you that when you start talking about increasing revenues, you really be able to show with specificity how you're going to do that.
Well, and you guys are in a primary right now, but in a general election, Republicans will say, hey, vote for Mark Connelly, Steve Marchand, Colin Van Ostern. They're going to raise your taxes. It's not a winning message typically here in New Hampshire, Steve Marchand.
It sure is when you have my background. In 2005, when I got elected mayor, the union leader editorial board, that noted Democratic lapdog, said the election of Steve Marchand as mayor is evidence that fiscal conservatism is alive and well in the state of New Hampshire, end quote. But that was 11 years ago. 2 weeks ago, they wrote an editorial saying that you can trust me with your money. And by the way, I'm the only one of the three that doesn't want to raise a tobacco tax. You know why? Because the only way you raise revenue from it is if people keep smoking. That's poor public policy.
Okay, couple quick questions, and I hope you guys can answer very quickly, yes or no. Colin Van Ostern, broad-based income tax and broad-based sales tax?
No.
Steve Marchand?
No.
Mark Connelly? No. Okay. Yesterday, we did a show on traffic deaths and why they're rising. Pretty scary statistics. So that's where this next two questions come from. Colin, mandatory seatbelt law in New Hampshire?
Yes.
Steve Marchand?
Yeah.
Yes. Mark Connelly? Yes. Okay. Last one, mandatory motorcycle helmets. Colin Van Ostern?
I think I'd have to learn more, to be honest, before I can give you a quick answer.
Okay.
My dad almost got killed when I was 6 years old by falling off a motorcycle on his way to 101 before they expanded it. I am very lucky my dad's here. It was by pure luck. I think we need the helmet law.
Okay, so if you're elected, mandatory helmet law. Mark Connelly?
I'd consider it.
Consider it. Okay. Another question that comes from one of our emails, and this has to do with Northern Pass, a big hydropower project, as you all well know, that's been stalled for a number of years. Here's an email from Angie. I like the way she phrases this. One question, no hemming or hawing. Do you support Northern Pass as it's proposed right now? Yes or no? Angie, thank you so much. And Mark Connelly, I'll turn to you first.
As proposed right now, no.
Steve Marchand?
In any form, no.
Colin Van Ostern.
Not what has been proposed, but to be clear, if they bury it, I think it should be on the table. I'm not close-minded on this.
They bury the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Mark, I agree.
Yeah?
I agree with Colin's.
Now, if you bury it, the taxpayers in New Hampshire, the ratepayers still don't get any benefit. It is disruptive. Your best-case scenario, it is a super highway with no exit ramps for New Hampshire. Ratepayers in southern New England are a beneficiary. Hydro-Quebec, north of the border, is a beneficiary. The best-case scenario, if they bury it, it's the equivalent of cosmetic surgery that doesn't look any better.
All right. Well, we have a ton of listeners who want to join us. Lots of emails, Facebook comments, Twitter, and on the phone, 1-800-892-6477. So let's go to our callers now. And Chris is calling in from Nashua. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. Go ahead.
So two main issues. The first would be improving basically our voting system. And by that, I mean kind of rolling back some of the, I think, arbitrary and partisan changes pushed through by O'Brien and his crew. I'd like to see, you know, early voting. I'd like to see mail-in voting. I'd like to see a lot of things to kind of increase the participation rate. So I'm wondering where the candidates stand on that. That's the first thing. And the second thing would be government transparency. So cleaning up the way lobbyists have to register, making sure everything's automated online and instant. And the same thing with politicians.
Okay,
right,
Chris,
everything is by design paper-based and slow.
Chris, we're sort of losing you there, so I'm going to let you go. Mark Connelly, I know this the second part of his question is important to you, government transparency and so forth.
Absolutely. I actually wrote a book about this in terms of the amount of influence, it's undue influence in Washington. It also happens in Concord. We need to open the system up. I think we can do a much better job in terms of disclosure, lobbying involvement in campaigns, disclosure of conflicts of interest that happen too often in state government. And I think we have to do a much better job at this. As far as voting rights, I'm hugely supportive of making our ballots as accessible as possible. I think some of the so-called O'Brien initiatives have been wrong for our state. We have to roll back some of these things about there's no fraud that's going on in our state. Maybe there's some time example somebody can point to, but when you have older people going to the polls and they're confused by not having an ID or they can have their picture taken, they feel it's a privacy issue. This is just wrong.
Would you, as governor, roll back the voter ID law?
I can't, as governor, do that, but certainly I would work with the legislature to do that. I think that it's a solution in search of a problem, and we have to make the ballot more accessible to people.
What do you think, Steve Marchand?
The
voter
short
ID?
Answer on both of the gentleman's questions is yes, you need to make it a lot easier to vote, and yes, you need to be a lot more transparent, because we're in a time right now where over 80% of Americans don't believe in government's ability to be efficient or effective. And that really gets at everything from why Donald Trump's the nominee to why people don't believe in large institutions. Two of the ways that we can deal with that, you need to make it much easier: automatic voter registration, mail-in. I think we're getting enough evidence from other states that these things can work and be really effective. And in terms of transparency, totally agree. Everything, including our campaign finance, to make it more automated. I know we're moving that way. We need to accelerate that in the way to increase confidence that the public has that we can do these things well.
What do you think, Councilor Van Ostern? Mail-in ballots and getting rid of voter ID?
We are first in the nation for a reason. It's because many people participate. We should take every possible way to have more people participate. I think there are some good ideas there. I also think that transparency is critical. I have made a point of putting this into practice through leadership. In this campaign, I was the first candidate to call on all the others to make our fundraising disclosures public months before is required by law, and didn't wait for everyone else to do it, did it on my own. And at this point, I'm very proud that we have had more human beings contribute to this effort, to my campaign for governor, than every other candidate for governor combined. I'm not just talking about Mark and Steve, but Ted Gatzis and Chris Sununu and Jeannie Forster and Frank Edelblatt. Your first question at the show was, what are some of the lessons we took from the movement that Bernie awakened in our country? And one of them is that the people have the power. And I believe that one of the ways you can put that into practice on a campaign is by having a true grassroots effort driven by thousands of people around the state. That's what I've done. And I think that sort of transparency and accountability to the people is critical at every level of government.
And Laura, I got to say one thing. Colin mentions this all the time. The first time he filed a report in this campaign was more than 9 months after he got in. I filed my first report barely 3 months after I got in.
Thank you for the call, Chris. We appreciate it. And here's an email from Jessica. How do the candidates feel about the legalization of marijuana in the state and using tax revenue for underfunded programs in the state, specifically opioid epidemic? I apologize. This is from Michelle. Michelle, thank you for the email. Now, Steve, we've already heard from you on this. You support the legalization and taxation of marijuana. Mark Connolly, how about you?
I think we should move towards it. As I mentioned earlier,
legalization is a big step.
It's a big step. I think we should move towards it. But as I mentioned, I don't think we're there yet. Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado, one of the first states to do this, they've had problems with edibles. They've had problems with packaging. They've had problems with distribution. And he has said he recommends that states looking at this should learn from the states that initially done this. And as I mentioned before, it could be $30 million, $50 million more in revenues. And certainly bringing into the open in terms of getting it away from people who are selling this stuff and putting it into our, the retail, it makes sense. But we're not there yet. And I think that trying to say that we're going to solve this by just doing it right now with a regulatory system in place or understanding the effects of this, I don't think is the right solution at this time today. And okay, we do have an opiate problem we need to be focused on.
And Councilor Van Ostern, I'll get your thoughts, too, on marijuana legalization in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a conversation with the three Democratic candidates for governor. All next week on Morning Edition, we'll feature the four Republican candidates. Join us for those interviews. Check them out online next week at nhpr.org. And for today, let's get your questions and comments in for the three Democratic contenders. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. The three candidates are Mark Connolly, Steve Marchand, and Colin Van Ostern. And Councillor Van Ostern, I did want to give you a chance to jump in on this question of whether New Hampshire should legalize marijuana. Steve Marchand supports it. Mark Connolly just told us that he's wait and see, if I could summarize it that way. We need to look at it carefully. What do you think?
I think we should join every other state in New England in decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana for personal use. And I also believe that our medical cannabis statute is probably too strict and healthcare practitioners should have a bigger role.
Another area where you disagree with Governor Hassan.
In terms of full legalization, I'm open-minded, but I'm not convinced. But to be honest, we are 41 minutes into the show and we are talking about this and we're not talking about the opioid crisis. So given that I have a couple minutes on it here, I'm going to focus on what I think is important.
Sure, let's turn there.
And frankly, on the opioid crisis, we need to look at what groups like New Futures, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, have said how we can stem the tide. They've put forward a specific plan, 5 points that includes making Medicaid expansion permanent, fully funding the alcohol fund, strengthening our workforce so there are more folks who are licensed drug and alcohol counselors, doing a better job of prevention in our schools, real evidence-based age-appropriate prevention, and making sure that private insurance isn't discriminating against folks getting access to behavioral health. I would also add to that, making sure that we take on the drug companies that have been sometimes fraudulently, I believe, marketing things like OxyContin. I authorized the Attorney General to investigate them for that exact reason earlier this summer. There is so much more there we need to do. I am the only candidate for governor who is on the website of New Futures as endorsing their plan. And I think that's a shame. I think others should join us in that effort. There are candidates and elected officials for state Senate, executive council, state house, dozens across the state who have. I would invite the other candidates, Democratic and Republican, to join me in that.
Well, and let's talk about the opioid crisis. You're absolutely right. We should address that. The legislature and governor did, as you all know, a lot on this over the past session, from dramatic increases in funding for treatment to strengthening the rules around prescribing to bolstering law enforcement. So, Mark Connelly, to you first. What more do you think needs to be done?
Well, first of all, I've put up my own plan, and it's uniquely a New Hampshire plan. I met with healthcare providers, law enforcement people, and it's about prevention in terms of getting sure that we are have the right laws in place. It's about treatment, getting people to bridging that to the recovery. It's demand supply. We've been focused on the supply of this thing for many years, trying to wrest our way out of it. And we look at a law enforcement viewpoint. We have to get the demand down, and we have to do
it. How do you do that?
I think it's recoveries in the communities. It's about peer-to-peer recovery. It's about substance abuse in terms of needle exchange programs. It's about getting medication treatment like Suboxone. It's really getting the money in the communities, getting beds.
And all this is happening. I mean, those efforts were made. So I'm just wondering what more you would do.
What I would do is I mentioned that I would increase the tobacco tax a dime and put that money into a treatment program, money down to the localities. This is what I would do. I would have the director of emergency management and the so-called drug czar meet weekly and have short, medium, and long-term plans. They're going to measure the demand and supply of this, because a lot of what we're doing, we need to break down the silos of how we put our emphasis and resources where they're most needed. And I think we can do a better job at that. And we have to put more money into this. I mean, one of the reasons why I think we have one of the lowest treatment rates in the country is because we haven't put any money in the communities. I spent a day with some firefighters this past spring, and they say, we pick these people up, we bring them to the hospital, and then we're bringing them in the next day with a shot of Narcan. So if you don't get intervention right at the point where people almost die and get them into longer-term recovery, and heroin changes brain chemistry. So in order to get people off this, we have to really have long-term recovery programs. And it actually makes sense economically. When we send somebody to the prison, it's like $35,000 a year. To put somebody through a drug court, which has been proposed and we're starting to do, is like $8,000 to $9,000 a year. It makes sense ethically. It makes sense economically. And we have to do a better job at attacking this program.
Go ahead, Steve Marchand. Again, a lot has been done already. There's money in the pipeline. Programs are starting to get up and running. What more would you do?
First, I just have to clarify something that Colin said a moment ago about New Futures. I can't speak for Mark, though. I'll bet he would say the same thing. I support the 5-step plan. Look, I haven't clicked on a website yet to sign up. I have community public social media. I will say this, though. The thing I'm doing that's a lot more than clicking on a website is I'm actually offering meaningful new revenue, which is how you're going to have to deal with this. Without that, we can't do everything that New Futures correctly wants us to do. In terms of the opiate crisis, well before thinking about running for governor, I was the head of the Chamber of Commerce and Ports with their Government Affairs Committee. They identified this along with housing and transportation as an economic issue, that magnitude. So I spent a lot of time last fall talking to folks trying to start recovery centers. And the number one challenge they face, they're doing God's work, but they don't have reliable operating funding to deal with long-term recovery. And it's not 28 days. That's an insurance construct. This is multi-year. Indeed, it's kind of a change in your life, or else we drop people back in the same situation that led to some of the dysfunction. So I have an $8 million plan that's the result of those conversations, then turned into a statewide plan that really focuses on delivering reliable operating monies to those 13 centers of recovery, because otherwise, what they told me, they have to spend so much time worrying about the 61st day of their budget. You know, they go 60 days at a time. It doesn't allow them to optimize what they can do with their funds and to do what got them into this line of, you know, God's work to begin with.
I'm just glad that we're making progress. That's two. Mark, you want to join us? We'll have a united front. All three Democratic candidates will endorse this plan.
Fine by me, but I think
that's
it's
great.
Really,
well, I got to pay for it, Colin. You got to pay for it, or so just click on a website.
The first two points of the plan that New Futures has put forward are actually about funding. First is to make Medicaid expansion permanent,
which we all agree
which
with.
Which would bring thousands. Well, I'm glad that
every Democrat agrees with.
I'm glad that we now have a united front.
They would have voted the same way.
I'm glad that we now have a united front on this plan. But the second point, and this goes to your question, Laura, is something that we haven't done yet, and we need to. The second point of their plan is to fully fund the alcohol fund in the state. That would raise revenue that we need for the drug and addiction treatment crisis from $6.5 to $19 million a year. That's important. And the reason I harp on Medicaid expansion is because of those 50,000 people who have gotten coverage, there are thousands today who are specifically getting addiction treatment services. It is absolutely critical. We are never going to arrest our way out of this problem alone. We need to attack the problem, not the people with the problem. And the way to do that is to attack it as a public health crisis. That's why I'm glad that there are outside nonprofits forming coalitions. That's how we got Medicaid expansion done in the first place. It wasn't just politicians campaigning on it. It failed twice. It took compromise. But when you have the nonprofits, the hospital association, the business association, all working together towards a shared goal, that's how leadership works.
Go ahead, Mark Connelly, and I have another question for all of you.
You know, we all agree that this is a problem. And we can all say, this is my plan, this is my plan, this is my plan. And how we're going to fund it, right? There's really not much of a distinction here, but here is the distinction. I was a department head in state government. I know what the silos are, and I'm 60 years old, and I've had 15 years basically being, most of that being an executive in state government. I think the difference between myself and my other fellow candidates is I know what it takes to communicate and how to break silos down. So my plan is saying no more about what my nuance of this plan or that plan. It's how are we going to work together and communicate? That's why I think what's really missing from this dialogue is taking the people who are most in charge of dealing with this problem and putting them in a room and communicating frequently. And that's what we need to do. We need to have better communication and management at this.
I have to take another call. Let's go to Linda in Newfields. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Laura.
Sure.
I certainly, the job of the governor is to promote all the progress in the state, but we have some current issues other than our important drug issue, and then one is water and its safety. Merrimack is currently having problems with their water as a result of contamination, as is certainly for a long time parts of the area in Pease. You know, the ball has been dropped here, and right now a lot of people are suffering on that. In lieu of what we've seen with Flint, Michigan, what are these candidates going to propose to help those people? It's an economic issue with real estate, as well as, of course, more importantly, a public health issue.
Absolutely, Linda. And I just want to let you know, I also got an email from Kim, also in your town, asking about this same question, toxic chemicals in our air, water, and soil. What role should the government play in early detection, prevention, and cleanup of groundwater contamination with cancer-causing PFOA, like we've seen in southern New Hampshire? So, Steve Marchand, I'll start with you. Yeah. Linda and Kim, both very concerned about these sources of water contamination.
Yeah, I'll focus on Pease, although what I fear is that's the tip of the iceberg, not just in New Hampshire, but nationally we're finding out between industrial sites as well as military sites. That's with Pease coming in. I've talked with some of the women who sparked this conversation. I think they didn't even fully realize how big a challenge they were dealing with. Here's the challenge. We are so early on in the history of understanding the magnitude of it, as well as the ramifications, that the standards being used at the state and federal level are, in my opinion, insufficiently weak. They're letting things go because we simply don't know how dangerous they are, which is a very disconcerting statement if you're a resident.
So what would you as governor do, given that a lot of this is kind of on those federal standards?
Here's the thing. We're not going to have a choice shortly, and so we need to get ahead of being mandated to do it. We're going to have to put very strict standards, lower standards for what is causes an alarm. And it means we're going to have to do much more sophisticated testing, and we're going to have to work with the federal government because some of this is groundbreaking. The feds are quickly realizing what we're doing. I'm telling you, around the country,
it's been happening.
This
elsewhere.
Is going to be a big deal in 5 years, and we got to be on the front end of it.
Okay, Colin Van Oostern, real quick, water contamination.
It's a serious issue in several communities in our state specifically. When this popped up this spring, I went to the first community meeting in Litchfield that the state held immediately after it happened, heard very powerful stories, took that message back to the governor and the department heads, pushed for lower thresholds on what was considered safe. Push for getting more testing of wells and private wells and contamination, additional bottled water more quickly to more people. All of those things happened immediately. But what's most important is that we also, and this is an issue I raise with the Attorney General, that we also make sure we put the company involved on notice to not just be on the hook to pay for these costs, if in fact they're the ones who need to be held accountable, which I think seems likely, but also that they're sufficiently held accountable that they don't view pollution as a cost of doing business.
So there's a legal action.
Absolutely. I worked at Stonyfield Yogurt. It is a company that proves you can succeed by doing it in a sustainable way, caring about the environment, caring about your consumers. And frankly, when that doesn't happen, part of our responsibility and leadership in the state is to hold big, powerful interests accountable for their actions. That is how, by the way, we got a multi-$100 million settlement for MTBE, another dangerous pollutant in our groundwater that is now being used to clean up wells and has made companies like Exxon realize how big of a hit they're going to take to their wallet if this actually continues to happen. Not even they can shrug off $300 million for one state.
Go ahead, Mark Connolly. This is a creepy story.
Well, when you're governor, you have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And when I was director of securities regulation, we went after Tyco, ING, Ameriprise, UBS, a lot of companies. Companies brought in $50 million in fine money to the state, held companies responsible and accountable. I agree that we have to understand the problem more fully. We have cancer cluster problems. We have perfluorochemicals. We have to understand exactly what the nature of the problem is. And we have to hold those individuals, those companies responsible. They should be the ones paying for the damage they've created. And the same thing is with our opioid crisis. You know, as Colin mentioned earlier, so many of these companies hypermarketed these pills in our state. And we should be going after them to help pay for this. So this is a growing problem. We need to fully understand it. There's an immediate need to get people clean water. We need to have a short-term plan. A medium-term is how we're going to get, you know, basically municipal water into their homes.
Right.
And switching longer-term to make sure that this doesn't happen again. What did we do wrong that this actually happened? And I think it was a failure of regulatory structure.
Well, thank you for those questions. A big issue and one we have covered a lot here on The Exchange. I have so many emails, and I want to thank everybody for sending us their questions and comments. We will not get to all of them, but I'm going to try and get these last two in, and I'll ask you to be quick. So here is one from Elsa, who says, I am a new New Hampshire resident who just registered to vote this week. I know I will be voting for one of these candidates in the primary, and I'm reading their websites to learn about them. Good for you, Elsa. You can also go to nhpr.org, by the way, to learn a lot more. Elsa says, I wonder if each of them could say in their own words why they would be the best Democrat for this fall's elections. I'm going to follow up on your email, Elsa, also with a similar email from KK, who says, ask each candidate what their three must-haves are for a better future for New Hampshire. So let's, in the interest of time, focus it the way KK asks us to. And Steve Marchand, I'll start with you. Three must-haves for a better future for New Hampshire.
Well, this all comes off of listening to the private sector. I'm going to say four because I have been doing four for 6 months. America's best outcomes in pre-K through 12 education, reversing our infrastructure deficit, particularly in those that are the least sexy but most important to local government, building a culture of entrepreneurship that makes it easier for new businesses to start in New Hampshire, and there's tax and public policy for that. Reversal of the opiate and heroin crisis. The overarching thing to all this, We need smart public investment that breeds private investment. For 50 years, we've been devolving away from the state, partnering with local government. You need somebody in local government that understands we got to get back in the business of partnering together.
So you gave us four. So public education, infrastructure, entrepreneurship, and the opioid crisis. Colin Van Ostern?
I'm going to do my best to answer both because I want to welcome Elsa to the best place in the country to live and work and grow a business and raise a family. Here is how we keep it that way. We keep our state moving forward. That means we make Medicaid expansion permanent so people have access to good health care all across the state and we have a strong workforce and have what we need for the opioid crisis. We invest in clean and renewable energy projects, which will bring electricity costs down, help businesses grow, create local jobs, and protect the environment. And we strengthen our schools from full-day public kindergarten all the way to college that does not leave you crushed by debt. The reason I am fighting for these things, and I think what makes me unique in this field, is because I've been the one who's been part of the progress that we've made casting the deciding vote to expand Medicaid now, the one who led the effort and has been endorsed by Planned Parenthood for having Planned Parenthood funding in our state. There are clean energy projects across this state that are popping up today because I fought hard for them. That record of results and progress matters. And I hope Elsa will spend a little extra time on VanOstern.com as she's doing her research.
Well, and to you also, Mark Connolly, KK's question. Ask each candidate what their three must-haves are for a better future for New Hampshire.
Okay, we have a two-year term for governor, and 67 agencies report to that two-year term for governor. So when people ask me, what are you going to get done in that at length of time? Medicaid expansion is critical to our future. That brings $800 million over a two-year period of time. And having it in permanent means we have stability in terms of the business community. We have to have something we haven't talked about, education funding. We have a defunct formula. The city of Dover sued the state. The state won't defend it. This is critical in terms of what's going to happen in the next 2 years. The governor has to decide that and help with the legislature. And certainly the opioid crisis. We need to bring this under control. Why me? I'm 60 years old. I think I would make decisions differently today than I was a much younger person. I have 38 years experience in the public and private sectors. And we have a lot of our own endorsers. But I will tell you that getting things done doesn't make you the institutional favorite.
Well, gentlemen, we could have gone on a lot longer, a lot of issues we didn't tackle. I want to thank you all very much for being here. Mark Connolly, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Connolly is a principal at Newcastle Investment Advisors, former director of the State Bureau of Securities Regulation. Steve Marchand, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Steve Marchand, former mayor of Portsmouth, principal of SRM Consulting. And Colin Van Ostern, thank you also for your time.
Thanks. Let's keep the state moving forward.
Colin Van Ostern, executive counselor from District 2. And just a reminder, there is a lot more information on our website, nhpr.org, infographics, reports on where all the gubernatorial candidates stand. And next week, Rick Ganley will be sitting down with the Republican contenders for governor. Thanks for listening. This is The Exchange on NHPR.